20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Happy Sunday, Packers fans. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks, as always, for being here. Awesome show for you today. This was an interesting one to kind of put together because I was kind of thinking of some things that I would still like Green Bay to do this offseason. I'm like, I wonder if I could put together a sort of final to-do list for the remainder of this offseason from now until basically the start of the season, right? And I'm not talking the obvious stuff. I'm not talking about, well, you know, get down to 53 men, get to the 16 or 17 man practice squad with the international pathway program. I'm not, we all know that there's certain checkpoints throughout the course of the season that Green Bay is going to have to hit and those things that they're going to have to do. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about what does Green Bay still need to accomplish this offseason before they head into the season. So we're going to get to that in just a moment. Before I get there, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Luke Liskowski. Thanks for signing up, Luke. Also, The Gable Storm, brand new Hall of Fame member, The Gable Storm. Thank you so much for signing up. Appreciate you a ton for that. And Hall of Fame, that's awesome. I really, really appreciate all of our members. And I'll say this once, I'll say it a million times. That is not a requirement for anyone. I appreciate everyone that's here. You don't have to sign up. There's some cool perks that come along with it. If you want to check out those memberships, make sure to do so. But I just appreciate getting to talk Packers 365 days a year. So thank you to everyone for that opportunity. With that, no other news or notes from Saturday. That's going to probably be the case more often than not between now and probably for the most part, the rest of the offseason up until training camp. We've got some OTAs and mini camps coming up, and there will be definitely some news and notes here and there, but a lot of these are going to be probably a little bit more meat and potatoes, kind of talking about the main issue at hand. Like I said, today's main issue at hand is going over the remaining to-do list for the Packers this offseason. I really wanted to add in something to the effect of trade for Trey Hendrickson. I would have loved a Trey Hendrickson trade at some point this offseason. I think it would have been a ton of fun. And there were the moments too where you certainly looked at a variety of these different, you know, maybe edge rushers that would have become available, whether it would have been Max Crosby or a Myles Garrett or somebody like that. And we've talked about it all offseason of like, if one of these guys does become available, like Green Bay should definitely look into it. And yeah, they probably should have or could have if a couple of those guys became available. I think you've now reached the point where it's just not logical. It's just not realistic. Maybe logical is the wrong word. I could easily make a very logical and sound argument of like, yeah, sure, go get Trey Hendrickson. Add one of the best defensive ends and best pass rushers and best sack artists to this team and prosper. I could make that argument pretty easily. I think we know how this team operates. I think we know how Goody operates. I think they've now gone out and added a fourth and fifth round pick. And let me be clear, I'm not saying that those fourth and fifth round picks are going to go out and do what Trey Hendrickson could do or anything like that. But they now have Rashawn Gary, LVN, who they spent a first round draft choice on. They've got Kingsley Nigbare, Brenton Cox, a fourth and a fifth round pick, Aaron Mosby, etc. Like, they've got guys that are going to fill those defensive end spots. And they have two pretty big investments in Rashawn Gary as a first-round pick plus a big contract and LVN as a first-round pick that they're going to hope can step up and be those players that they are expecting them to be and that they don't have to go out and trade for a Trey Hendrickson or anything like that. Add on top of that, that next year's salary cap is going to get much tighter for Green Bay. And it's not just trading for Trey Hendrickson and giving up, you know, a significant asset for him. The reason that he is upset and wants a trade is because he wants to be one of the highest paid defensive ends in football, and rightfully so. And I think if you're Green Bay, it probably isn't the right time or place to maybe do the trade for him plus give him a massive contract at this stage of his career. If I were Green Bay, I would entertain it. I would talk about it, but that time and place for that probably should have been earlier. You know, now that you've signed Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs and added a fourth and fifth round defensive ends, I don't think it makes the most sense anymore. So I just don't see it happening is kind of the bigger reason that something like that is not on this list. And there's not really many other players out there via free agency or trade that you could make a strong argument for. And trust me, I poured over the names. I poured over the lists. I went over every, you know, trade candidate article that was out there and possible remaining free agents. And it would have been an easy topic of conversation, right? Of go sign this guy, go trade for this guy. I just couldn't find anything that made a ton of sense. We'll talk about one position in particular where maybe they could be a little bit more active, but we'll get to that in just a moment. The number one thing on Green Bay's to-do list is, of course, the Jaire Alexander situation. We don't need to go into it a ton. We've had, I think, like four or five episodes basically like dedicated to that topic all throughout this offseason. And I've made cases for bringing Jaire back. I've made cases for moving on from Jaire. And at this point, whatever that ultimate determination is, whether it's stay in Green Bay, trade, or release, at some point in time, they're going to have to come to a conclusion on it. And we've talked about at length where that overall decision point is not until, it doesn't have to be until the start of the regular season, up until when he's on the week one roster and his full salary this year guarantees. That's the deciding factor. That's the only deadline that Green Bay has in this entire process. They can hold out as long as they want. They can wait to see if they can figure out a different contract for Jaire. They can wait and see if some team has a player that at corner that tears an ACL or a big time player in their secondary that goes out and maybe they'd be interested in Jaire at that point. They can still wait this out if they want. I don't know what their appetite is going to be for that. Clearly their appetite's been so far of like, hey, we're willing to wait. We'll see if that continues. But at some point, whether it's now or anytime before the start of the regular season, they're going to have to make an ultimate determination on Jaire. What that is, what they should do, everyone's got a strong opinion on it one way or the other. I've made the very clear statement that the best case scenario, the absolute best case scenario, is that Jaire is back on the team, stays healthy, and plays great. You can't guarantee those things when you make that determination and decision, but that's still the best case scenario. There is nobody on this team that's like Jaire when it comes to just pure coverage skills. And you take Jaire off of this team and you can see those holes at corner develop pretty quickly. Maybe not to the extent of maybe what some people feel. I do think they can get by with Hobbs and Nixon and Bullard and Valentine and maybe some of the Kalen Kings and Kamal Haddins and things like that. But it's definitely a big difference when you look at that depth chart with and without Jaire Alexander. But one way or the other, they're going to have to come to a determination on that. Number two, if I were Goody, I would have my pro personnel department working this corner free agency class nonstop. I'd be scouring every team's roster for every cornerback that they have on it, which players are potentially cut candidates, which ones are trade candidates. Me personally, I just don't feel like the depth is good enough right now at corner. I would make that argument even with Jaire Alexander. If Jair's there, I still feel good. I certainly feel good about the top of it. Jaire, Nixon, Hobbs, Bullard to some extent, Valentine. I feel good about that. And then you're starting to get to the point of like, all right, you've got four guys plus Bullard, and then you just need a couple of guys that can go out and play special teams, right? Maybe that's Kamal Haddon, Kalen King. We heard some positive words about Kalen King this past week from Derek Ansley. You're probably okay. Micah Robinson's a seventh round pick. If Jaire's there, I feel less worried about it, but you're still kind of an injury away from being like, oh, I really don't feel great. And this is a pro personnel department that has found Keyshawn Nixon on a one-year vet minimum deal. This is a pro personnel department that found Rasul Douglas on an opposing team's practice squad just ready to be picked up. They've done a great job at finding these type of players. And a scouting staff that has found Carrington Valentine in the seventh round. A pro personnel staff that recently brought in Nate Hobbs. We'll see what that turns into, but I feel pretty good about it knowing that this is a pro personnel staff that's found some pretty good corners. Whatever that next corner is, or whoever that next corner is, I would be scouring every corner that could potentially become available or is available. I'd be looking at the UFL right now. There's some intriguing names that could potentially become available. I'm not saying that they're going to solve any problems, but there's some interesting names in the UFL market at corner that have been playing actually some pretty good football. Damon Arnette, the former first-round pick by the Raiders, is one that's trying to revitalize his career and is playing some pretty good football over there. Michael Ojemudia is a guy that I think was a Broncos third-round pick. He's having a pretty good year. I would be looking everywhere. No stone unturned. And like I said, my pro personnel department would be focusing 1,000,000% just on corner. I feel like this team is pretty well set everywhere else. But if Jaire is not back, whatever, and you know, if that ends up happening in that direction, then I do believe that you are at least a corner short. And let me just say, there's nothing out there that I can tell. Like, again, I scoured these lists. I looked at all the names. I went through and even watched tape on some of these guys. I just couldn't find something. I wanted to go like, yeah, Caleb Farley, former first round pick. Could you Rasul Douglas him? Meaning take a flyer on him, bring him in for a minimal kind of deal and see if you can revitalize his career, jumpstart his career, because it never really got off the ground in the first place. Even that just didn't feel awesome to me. But you know what? You know what group of people might know which corner to bring in? Green Bay's personnel department, right? So I would, that's what I would have them focus on. Give me a list. And the other thing I would do here too is all these available free agents that are out there, bring them in, try them out. See if something looks interesting. See if something piques your interest. Just get maybe one more guy in that room that maybe either has some experience or again, could be this kind of flyer that maybe was a previous top 100 pick. Again, a Rasul Douglas type of situation or scenario. Just probably not Rasul Douglas himself, even though he's still out there. I'll say it again. He just did not look like himself at all last year. Don't think that's the right direction to go, but I would be looking, again, no stone unturned at that corner position to see if there's anyone that potentially makes sense, especially in the case where maybe Jaire Alexander would not be back. Number three, figure out this Elgton Jenkins situation. You already got one with Jaire. You've got another with Elgton Jenkins. I don't think this is going to be anything that takes a great deal of time. We don't even know if Elton's going to be missing any of the mandatory parts of camp and things like that. But I still think, like, just hook him up with something. Can we give him some, you know, incentives in his contract? If he hits all pro status, a portion of his contract guarantees next year. If he hits Pro Bowl, there's a different percentage that guarantees, whatever it might be. Can we add in some things that make it worthwhile for Elgton, but also are a benefit potentially to Green Bay, where if he plays well, then it just makes sense. That's what I would be looking at. It's probably not quite that easy, but figure out something to make Elgton happy. You have to always be careful with this stuff, because if you give in every time, well, then anytime anyone's in this situation, they just say, give me more money, give me more guarantees, whatever that thing is that they want. And if Green Bay has the history of doing it every time, then you have more people coming up and asking. But I also don't think you want Elgton being, you know, unhappy or frustrated with the situation or not showing up. You want Elgton there working with Jordan as soon as possible and getting back to working at center. I think that's going to be a very important aspect of the offensive line this year. I expect Elgton to be great at it, but the more reps he can get as he makes that move, the better. And just figure out something where he can get in here, start working with the team and start working with Jordan and work on his center skills. I think that's, like I said, very important. I would be making sure that he is here sooner rather than later. And I'm not saying whatever he needs, but let's figure out something that is workable for both the Packers and Elgton Jenkins. All right, so I'm going to need to legitimately try and temper my excitement here for just a moment, because I found a new app that has not only helped me win, but has enhanced my enjoyment of playoff hockey and playoff basketball, and it could not have come at a better time. Recently, I found the Hall of Fame app, and let me just tell you, this app is not just for fun and games, although it's great for that too. This thing is a full-fledged analytics engine that gives you access to advanced stats, historical data, and powerful tools to help you bet smarter. But what I love about this app is that it's built for the everyday sports fan, and it's insanely simple to use. And with a 4.9 rating in the App Store and over 6,000 five-star reviews, it's safe to say that the HOF app has already helped a ton of people bet smarter. Here's the best part. Our listeners at Packaday get a free 7-day trial and 50% off their first month. Just download the HOF app and use code Packaday at checkout. Hall of Fame isn't just about parlays. It's built for player props, game lines, totals, and more. It gives you the tools you need to break down trends, spot value, and make smarter bets. And now, for a limited time only, get a 7-day free trial and 50% off your first month when you use code Packaday at checkout. That's the Hall of Fame app on iOS or Android using code Packaday, and you're all set. So what are you waiting for? Make sure you're betting smarter with the Hall of Fame app. Number four, to some extent, it might be a little bit late. It's not late or like, period. It's not over. I wish they just would have maybe done something a little bit sooner, because the tackle market has already exploded with contracts like Dan Moore. But let's see if Green Bay can get Zach Tom under an extension sooner rather than later. It just feels like every day the tackle market just goes up and up and up. And the longer that you wait, the higher that price tag is going to be. And it's already going to be pretty darn exorbitant. But there's a very minimal downside with Zach Tom. You give him a big contract, and even if he has like a down season or something, or at some point, you can still move him to guard. You can move him to center. He's got so much versatility. It's just a really good football player there. He's been good since day one, and there's no reason to kind of drag this out too long. get him under contract, make him one of the highest paid right tackles in all of football. He's deserving of it. And I do think that this should be one that gets done hopefully sooner rather than later. I wouldn't mess around with it. Again, the rates continue to go up at tackle. The CBA is going to only continue to go up, at least at its current pace. The deal will be workable. And I just think you want to get him under contract so that that contract doesn't continue to expand and expand and expand and potentially get to a place where you're just like, oh my goodness, are we sure we still want to do this? I think just get that deal done, make it so that Zach Tom is a Packer for the foreseeable future. Just note here, I said, figure out Elgton Jenkins and then figure out Zach Tom. That is not a mistake. That is not an order of operations error. I think if you go out and give Zach Tom a huge contract, if you're Elgton, you're just thinking like, oh my God, what is happening? You gave Zach a huge contract. You brought in Aaron Banks for a huge contract. Like, can I get something here? You're moving me to center. My next year's contract is no guarantees basically whatsoever. Like, can we figure something out here? But figure out the Elgton stuff first, then re-sign Zach Tom to that huge contract. Number five, I've talked about before. I don't know that anything's going to come out of it, but I would certainly be at least having the conversation. And that's just, let's have a talk with Malik Willis's agent. I don't think you're going to be able to lock him into anything sort of long-term, but I think what you need to do is at least make it interesting for 2026 of a decision that Malik Willis and his agent would have to make. What I mean by that is if I'm Malik Willis, or if I'm Malik Willis's agent, and again, I've talked about this before, I need to go to a team next year where I have a chance to be a starter, whether that's a team that's looking at me as a legitimate starting opportunity, or whether that's a team that is going to draft a quarterback in the first round, but they need a potential stopgap guy while he kind of gets his feet underneath them, or whether it's just a team that has a whole bunch of crappy quarterbacks and I want to go and be the backup there because I might have a better chance to actually become the starter or compete for the starter, or they're going to get benched eventually and I might be able to be the guy. If I'm Malik Willis, if I'm his agent, I'm going to take that chance in my career that I can go out and actually be a starter in this league. Now, Malik Willis is all of 25 years old. He turns 26 in about a week, actually. A week from today, exactly, he'll turn 26 years old. That means next year he'll be 27 years old, and the following year he'd be 28. At 28, he would still be a potential starting caliber quarterback. He's not overaged by that standpoint, right? He's still going to have the opportunity to get paid or maybe a starting opportunity down the road. So if I'm Green Bay, I need to come up with a number that makes sense of like, hey, you need to at least consider this. If Green Bay right now offered Malik Willis a one-year $7.5 million deal to stay, if you're Malik Willis and his age, I think you have to at least consider it. Now, that might be a little bit high. You know, we have seen, what was it, like Chase Daniel went for like a one-year $10 million deal or something like that. I want to say not too long ago, but that's a good price for a backup quarterback on a one-year deal. And right now, there's no guarantee that Malik gets any opportunities. And he could go out and have a bad preseason this year and then not get any opportunities in the regular season and be worth less on the open market next year. But if I'm Green Bay, I'm looking at it and saying, man, I have the best possible backup. He showed it last year, can come in, run a version of the offense, still be successful, came up with some big throws and some big moments. You know, we're not going to ask him to do too much, but we really like who he is. He seemed like the consummate professional, like a perfect backup for Jordan. If I'm Goody, I'm making sure I at least make it a decision. And if I make a good offer at like $7.5 million for next year, and they're like, nah, we're good. All right, well, at least I tried. At least I tried to get him back. And if you're Malik Willis and his agent, you might say, all right, like 1 year, 7.5 is tough to pass up. That's a good amount of money next year. And then we're still an unrestricted free agent the year after that when he's 28 years old, which isn't the worst case scenario in the world. So I'm at least working on it if I'm Goody and company and seeing if we can get something done, because I do think he's a great backup for Jordan Love and it gives them a real opportunity to win football games if Jordan goes down for a 3 to 5 game stretch. So if I'm at least going to have that conversation if I'm Goody. Number six is explore Romeo Doubs' trade value. And if some of the rumors and reports out there are true, it sounds like maybe they did this a little bit during the DK Metcalf trade rumors and whatnot, but I am going to say this clearly. I would not trade Romeo Doubs at this point in time. I'm at least getting through camp and seeing where Golden and Savion Williams are at and Wicks and Reed and all those guys. And I probably need one more to step up, whether that's Malik Heath or Bo Melton or whomever. I'm at least, you know, looking to make sure that the receivers are in a great spot before I trade Romeo. And even then, I still might keep him up until maybe the time where Christian's about to come back and you can explore it at the trade deadline. But you want to be prepared just in case. If you do get to the end of training camp and Savion Williams looks like a stud and Matthew Golden looks like a stud, Wicks looks like he was in 2023 and Reed looks great, yeah, you could probably have a little bit more of a conversation of like, hey, can we move on from this guy, get something in return? Or at the trade deadline, if he's playing great and your team is just struggling and is behind the eight ball and probably can, you know, look to trade somebody away and it's not going to hurt the team all that much, all right, well, then you could trade Romeo Doubs in that situation. I would just be prepared, knowing what I could get, whether it be player, pick, or whatever, to say, hey, all right, if this doesn't go the way that we expect it to, or if just we have a great receiving room and we need to kind of almost clear a body to make it so that everyone's getting enough opportunity in the offense, all right, well, then see if you can maybe make that trade. But I'd at least be sniffing around, gauging the value, and seeing it so that when, if and when that time does come, I can make an educated decision on it and say, all right, let's make that phone call and let's figure out that trade. Or no, the offers weren't good enough. We're just going to keep him on the team anyway. And I'll say it one more time. If it were me, I would keep him at least at this point in time and see how things go and then make that decision later. Number seven is build that Savion Williams offense. This is a little bit more of just a start building in some of these new plays and designs for Matthew Golden and Savion Williams and some of these new players on offense. But it's also, hey, this guy is potentially special. Figure out ways to get the ball in his hands and let him do some heavy lifting for you. I do think he has that type of ability. I do agree with Goody that if you look at Savion Williams, especially in his, you know, first couple of years at TCU, or I should say the two prior years at TCU, he does look like a true wide receiver. This is not just your gadget guy that cannot do true wide receiver stuff. I believe he can do really legitimate true wide receiver stuff. I don't think you have to baby him or say, yep, let's just end arounds, reverses, put him in the backfield, wildcat stuff. I don't think that's the way that you have to go about it. But I do think he's massively talented. And I do think that he can do some really fun stuff with the ball in his hands. So if I'm Matt LaFleur, I'm getting in the lab, I'm drawing stuff up, I'm seeing what plays could potentially work, and I'm making sure that I have an offense that's built and ready for some of those situations and scenarios where you do, in fact, want to get the ball in Savion Williams' hands. Now, again, this goes for everything. Matthew Golden is a piece of this as well. How do you want to get him involved? And how do you just kind of piece all of these different weapons together to form a offense that is cohesive and unique and is, you know, serving that idea of illusion of complexity? But I'm starting with Savion Williams, if I'm Matt LaFleur, just because it's probably the most fun version of that. And I do want legitimately some plays that are going to work really well for him and making sure I'm getting the ball in his hands. Number eight is figure out your preseason plan. Green Bay's got two insanely tough games to start the season. Detroit at home, Washington at home. Their plans in the past have not been conducive to them being fully functional or even close to it in week one, even maybe week two. I don't think they lost in Brazil last year because they were unprepared or did anything wrong in the preseason or anything like that. But I think a lot hinges on those first two games. If anything, you really cannot afford to go 0-2 in those games. Can you start 1-1? Sure. But you really don't want to start 0-2 against Detroit and Washington. And not only letting those two teams get wins, but you're starting well behind the eight ball at that point and have two home losses. And after that, only have six home games versus nine road games. Can't start 0-2. Whatever that preseason plan is, and I've said it a billion times, you're darned if you do, you're darned if you don't. If you play players and they get hurt, you're screwed. If you don't play players and you lose, you're screwed. You just have to make the decision and stick with it. But whatever that preseason plan is, whatever their plan is for joint practices, I don't care, but they've got to be ready for week one and week two with two very tough conference opponents and needing to come away with wins in those if they do in fact want a chance to be a, you know, not only a playoff team, but potentially a team that has the opportunity to win the division in 2025, 2026. Number nine is a unique one. We have seen Matt LaFleur bring in Aubrey Pleasant, Robert Saleh, and Luke Getsy in a variety of these different sort of consultants, right? And what Matt likes to do is bring in a former offensive coach and have him help on the defensive side of the ball to kind of help the defense know what an offensive coach is looking at when they're looking at Green Bay's defense and how they want to attack it and the weaknesses and the flaws and the, you know, the flaw in the Death Star that, you know, can make it implode or explode. That's what they're looking for. And the same thing on the opposite side, finding a defensive coach that can work with the offensive coaches to, again, look at any flaws or things that they would attack from the opposing side. Like I said, Aubrey Pleasant, Robert Saleh, multiple coaches, Luke Getsy, that they've used in this role in the past. I'm bringing in two more. I'm bringing in Antonio Pierce, who's got that connection with Rich Bisaccia and is another, you know, sort of Raiders connection. I'm bringing him in as a consultant to help out, again, with anything that Jeff Hafley wants any advice on, but more importantly, to work on the offensive side, to put together game plans and opportunities and options of how he would go about attacking Green Bay's offense. And I'm bringing in Doug Peterson as a former Super Bowl winning head coach and good offensive mind and Packers connections. I'm bringing him in as the offensive consultant that works with Jeff Hafley on the defensive side of the ball. I think those are two really smart coaches that are still available out there that, again, you don't have to bring in the building per se. They can almost do it remotely and they get to continue to improve and see how Green Bay does things. And it's a good connection. It worked out great for Robert Saleh this past year. Those are the two I'm going after and seeing if I can bring in two more really great consultants to help on both sides of the ball. And I'll always say it, the smarter people that you can get in helping your team, the better off that you're going to be. I think bringing in Doug Peterson and Antonio Pierce would both be really great hires. I almost, by the way, and I know it wouldn't really work, a part of me really wanted to say Mike McCarthy as that offensive coach, but I don't think that that's going to happen. So I'm going to say Doug Peterson, but bring him in. Bring in Doug Peterson, bring in Antonio Pierce, and let them help the opposing sides of the ball, respectively. Last but not least, this is not something that's going to improve the Packers. It's not something that's going to give their record any sort of boost this year. I've talked about it before. I'll talk about it again. I hate that the Packers, who are owned by the fans, have closed down mini camps to fans to attend. It used to be that you could attend mini camps, and it used to be that you could attend training camps. Training camp is still there, but when COVID hit, they took away mini camps, said fans can't attend, and they never gave it back. And as a fan, before I was credentialed, it was one of my favorite practices to go to every single year. It doesn't have the huge crowds of training camp. There's no dream drive. It's not corporately sponsored by anybody. It's just a bunch of nerdy fans lining up on the fence and watching a lot of these Packers, the rookies and the free agents, practice for the very first time. And it was awesome. I could not recommend it enough. And now it's gone. Unless you're credentialed, you do not get to see mini camp practices at all. And I just think it's crappy. And I really wish that they would find a way to change that. And sometimes those mini camp practices are a little bit nondescript, and I think that's maybe why they do it. But fans don't care. If it's just, I mean, look at family night. I mean, a lot of that stuff is quarterbacks thrown into a net and things like that, going through drills. They just want to see their team. They just want to see these guys in Packers uniforms for the first time, get that first glimpse of what the 2025, 2026 squad is going to look like in person. Open it back up. You're not running anything crazy in those anyway. You're not, you know, doing a hardcore install. Open them up, let the fans back in, let them see mini camp, and, you know, let this be the team that is still owned by and, you know, thought of by the fans and what their decision-making is in regards to. The fans should still have a big role in that. I get winning and losing is the number one. You're not losing any sort of competitive advantage by opening up just one practice. That's all I'm saying. Just one practice. Open up one mini camp practice back to the fans and let them attend. All right, I'll get off my soapbox now, but that's my one. I still am frustrated by. You're supposed to be a team that is, you know, owned by, operated by, and, you know, always considering the fans. And sometimes it just doesn't feel like that is always the case. Those are my 10 things that Green Bay, I think, needs to do this offseason. Figure out the Jair situation. Have your pro personnel department work on available corners and figure out at least your emergency list, if not bringing in one or two of these guys, maybe somebody from the UFL or, again, a free agent that's out there. Figure out the Elgton Jenkins situation. re-sign Zach Tom, talk to Malik Willis's agent and see if there's a deal that makes sense for both sides. Just get a gauge on Romeo Doubs' trade value. Don't need to do anything now, but if something does need to happen at some point, at least you know which teams to go to and call around and figure out what the best value is. Build your saving on Williams and kind of the remainder of the offense and defense based on getting some of these new players in. Figure out your preseason plan. Hire Antonio Pierce and Doug Peterson as consultants and open those mini camp practices back up to the Packer fans. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you as always for joining me. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jason Merman, B Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Kohner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, and Matt Geiger. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.